In Chinese culture, food is language. It describes basic things. For example, to have work is to have grains to chew. To lose one's job is to have broken the rice bowl. A meal in an American Chinese restaurant is, at best, a pale replica of the dishes prepared in China. Nicole Moniz has written extensively about Chinese food in Gourmet magazine, and she has translated that knowledge, as well as her own experience living in China, into a new novel, The Last Chinese Chef. And she's in the studio. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Let's start with the fact that you describe food as a mediator between Chinese and their culture. What do you mean?
Well, food is the main engine that drives connectedness, relationship in Chinese society. Guanxi is the word in Chinese. Food also is the power regulator. It sets hierarchy in business and in social situations.
Well, give us an example about how it would set hierarchy.
Well, an excellent example occurred just a little over a year ago on the state visit that Chinese leaders made to the United States. And President Hu Jintao came and was invited to lunch by the White House instead of a state dinner. That was quite an insult. In the language of Chinese cuisine, that says, you don't rate. Food is the time when people come together, they set their relationship, and they ensure that they are partners in whatever venture is about to unfold. And then the business takes place later.
Can you elaborate a little bit on what food means? There's the flavor and there's texture, but there's also meaning.
You know, to me, that was one of the most interesting things about researching this book, was uncovering what food means and looking at the ways it's completely different from the cuisine of the West. Chinese food tries to engage the mind, not just the palate, to provoke the intellect. You know how when something surprises you, you wake up a little bit. That's done through Chinese cuisine, for example, through dishes of artifice. That's a whole sub-tradition in Chinese cuisine, to create a dish that comes to the table looking like one thing, but actually is something else. Maybe the most obvious example is vegetarian dishes that are created to resemble whole roast ducks or whole steamed fish, and sometimes you have to get very close to them and even taste them before you realize this is not what it appears to be. Each one of those things flatters the diner's intelligence and presents them with a tiny epiphany to spice up their meal.
In one part of China, food is literature.
That, to me, was fascinating. That's the city of Hangzhou you're talking about. And, you know, they say that the cuisines of different Chinese provinces arose originally to serve different kinds of constituencies. Beijing was the cuisine of officials. In Shanghai, that was the cuisine of wealthy merchants and industrialists. In Sichuan, the food of the common people. Many great Sichuan dishes originated in street stalls. But Hangzhou was a city, beautiful city, still is a beautiful city, which was the place where food was the food of and for the literati. There was a great tradition of local poets and calligraphers being closely entwined with the restaurant scenes. And banquets became occasions for poetry to actually be inspired and created at table.
The novel is about a food writer, Maggie. After the death of her husband, she goes to China. A paternity suit has been filed by a woman who claims her child's father is Maggie's husband. Maggie meets the chef, Sam, whose family's history as chefs goes back to imperial times, and it gives you the chance to tell this story through the history of Chinese cuisine. I love the part where Sam senses her grief over her husband's death and serves her a chicken dish with coriander and garlic and other herbs that are meant to actually relieve grief, make her feel better.
Right. These flavors, traditionally, historically, are flavors that bring grief up out of the body and help you release the feelings that shouldn't be held in too long.
You first went to China in 1977?
Yes. I started a textile business there right after the close of the Cultural Revolution. Food then was a completely different experience. Almost all restaurants had been closed. A few had been left open just for purposes of state. And those were where I had my first Chinese cuisine experiences, which blew my head off. They were really, really different meals from anything I'd ever experienced here in the United States.
Describe some of the things you ate.
Fantastic diversity, subtlety, the dishes that comprise the Chinese-American style of cooking are fairly narrow in range, and they tend to rely on a fairly small range of pre-mixed sauces, which is why you can go through a 100-item menu in a Chinese-American restaurant and only encounter 5 or 6 flavors. There, everything was different. There was a tremendous use of products that you don't usually expect to find in high-end cuisine, preserved seafood, smoked dishes, many surprisingly delicious.
Jellyfish.
Jellyfish is a texture food. That's another fascinating thing about Chinese cuisine, which separates it somewhat from other world cuisines. They have manipulation of texture as a conscious goal, and jellyfish is a perfect example of that. It's always dressed with the same fairly minimal dressing. The flavor is not what it's about. It's an achievement of texture.
There's a crunchy texture.
Yes, but spongy and yielding at the same time.
Yeah.
And all that is wrested out of a dried aquatic product. So that's not easy.
Has food changed really in China from imperial days till now?
Well, of course. Food became a bourgeois decadent pleasure between the years 1950 or so and around 1985. The very phrase to go out to a restaurant, xia guanzi, was originally a phrase that connoted great joy and excitement. Then for several decades, it had the feeling of something evil, something that you wouldn't want to do, you would never admit having ever done in the past. But slowly, along with food itself, the phrase became rehabilitated, and food by the 1990s was once again becoming a source of boundless joy and entertainment and adventure. The privatization of the economy, which began really in earnest in the 1990s, took restaurants as one of its first arenas. That was one of the first places where people were able to, with, you know, fairly limited resources, restart businesses, and also where there was a huge audience just waiting to be served, literally.
Do you have a favorite dish?
In this novel, I would have to say my favorite dish is pork ribs wrapped in lotus leaves and steamed. And it is, I have had it, and it is a wonderful dish.
There are recipes for some of the dishes in the book at your website, right?
Right, NicoleMones.com.
M-O-N-E-S.com. How do you know that the recipes are accurate? Don't most chefs leave something out?
That's a good question, and the answer is yes. One of the recipes on the website is for beggar's chicken. That's one of the most famous Chinese dishes in the world, and yet for a dish so famous, it's rather hard to find, perhaps because the traditional preparation is pretty arduous. You have to encase a chicken in mud and bake it for a long time. But when I went to a restaurant in Hangzhou called Lo Wai Lo, where the dish, some say the dish originated, and I asked them if they would part with their recipe for it, one of the head chefs there told me, all right, I'm going to give you the recipe, but two conditions. First, I'm not going to give you the whole recipe because certain ingredients have to stay secret, but I'm going to give you most of the recipe. And the other thing he said, which was quite interesting, is, now we must begin 3 weeks before you slaughter the chicken. And I said to him, you know, Americans buy their chicken in the supermarket. That's not something they're going to be able to use. And he said, no, no, no. How the chicken lives its life is extremely important. Fresh air, nutritious food, plenty of exercise. If you're not willing to commit to these things for your chicken, I'm not sure if I want to give you the recipe.
What are the chances, do you think, that the cuisine described in your book will appear in restaurants in the United States?
To a great degree, it has appeared in restaurants in the United States. Anytime there's a place where a sizable enough Chinese population has accumulated, there is a constituency to support an excellent Chinese taste restaurant. And there are enclaves in the United States where there are quite a number of these restaurants. The San Gabriel Valley, east of downtown Los Angeles, is one such place. Flushing, New York, is another place. Some areas of San Francisco have quite a few of these restaurants. But I would say that there's probably not a major city in the U.S. today where you wouldn't find at least one or two such restaurants, or at the very least, selected dishes on restaurant menus. It all depends on the diner's willingness, first of all, to try something new, and second, just to seek it out.
Nicole Mones is the author of The Last Chinese Chef, and it's published by Houghton Mifflin. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much.
You can find links to recipes from The Last Chinese Chef on our website, npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen.